Fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the pantiness, baby.
Hello and welcome to the tech podcast nobody asked for, but everybody loves. It's called Two and a Half Bens. I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
I'm Sir Bimrose.
Yeah, and yes, well, here we are. Here we are once again. It's been,
or at least I will be if I can caffeinate.
Well, yeah, I ate dinner. We're still working, kind of working.
You sound pretty caffeinated right there.
Oh yeah,
He usually sound caffeinated?
Absolutely.
Most people call it meth.
It's part of his charm.
Jeez. Yeah, that too. Well,
and it get glazed.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
All right, so
best joke of my night. And it got glazed.
Well, yeah, we've had a rough couple weeks here in Casa Lotus, but we don't need to get into that here. But it's
they all know.
Yeah, they all know anyway. So, this is probably the first quote unquote normal. You cooking dinner. I mean, we've had somewhat normal day.
No, I cooked dinner the other night, but.
And then you had to ruin it with the THB episode.
I'm not even going to lie. I was looking forward to this episode. This is kind of the soft landing I need to get back on my feet for tomorrow's show.
Yeah.
And like somebody said, I think it was NetNed was like, you know, glad to see you're hanging in there or whatever. It's like, hey, if I'm casting, I'm breathing.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. So
you basically know how Phoenix is doing by whether she's able, willing to get on a microphone.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, is your ankle healed after you did?
Not even a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's the ankle, Lee Majors?
Yeah. It turns out that a particularly bad tear in ligaments, tendons, whatever important connecting things there are, it doesn't heal in just 2 weeks.
You tore shit?
Absolutely.
Oh, bro. I didn't realize you tore stuff, Sir Bemrose.
This was... I didn't know. It is technically an ankle sprain, but I didn't know sprains could get this bad. I was on crutches for a week.
Sprains are usually not categorized once a tear occurs. It's usually only a stretch of a ligament or tendon. Once you tear, that's a full-on fucking tear, not a sprain.
Well, what they determined was I don't need surgery, but I do need... they said 4 weeks off work. I'm going to go fucking insane if I have to spend two more weeks doing nothing.
You could always put out an ATN.
But I'm already... I need to be insane for that.
Well, you're halfway there then.
And then they want 4 to 6 weeks of physical therapy after that. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, your physical, wouldn't your physical therapy be actually like, walking around?
Walking?
Disc golf.
Actually, that's one of the things that I thought. The only problem, of course, is, if I put my foot in a place that's particularly bad and don't have, I do not want to re-injure myself. So.
Oh, no, you don't want to do that. No, that's
because usually then, watching where you're putting your feet helps prevent that.
Except it's hard to see it in the dark, because
I'm talking about when disc golfing, not his work.
Yeah, well, no, you don't. Pacific Northwest in December, it's always dark.
Good point.
Yeah, pretty much.
At noon, it is dark.
Yeah, for the most part.
And I don't need Bemlet trying to carry me off the course.
No, it's probably not.
Okay, I'm getting out my bank account. I want to see that. I'd pay to see that.
All righty.
Little brother carrying big brother.
All right, so what
do we... I came flush with stories about tech today.
Oh, you did, huh?
Woohoo! He's had a week to recuperate.
Yeah, I see. So what do you got?
Let's start with React to Shell.
Oh boy, yes. Oh,
are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, the React to that's one of those security vulnerabilities that
Okay, I'm going to start off. Okay, first of all, some vital statistic about this. CVE 2025-55182. It has a CVSS of 10.0.
Yeah, which pretty much means, you don't need
orbit,
credentials.
You're screwed.
As bad as it gets. It's the kind of thing where if your cert system is vulnerable, you may as well take it offline and pave it now.
It has its own website and a theme song.
Well, it does. Holy crap.
Its own website, that website was put up by the guy who disclosed the vulnerability. Now, real quick background, React is a full-on JavaScript framework that was originally created by folks at Facebook. I don't even have to do the disclaimer where I'm not calling their company Meta because they shouldn't be taking over common words, because when it was created, they really were Facebook and not Meta. But it was created for the Facebook site and then eventually got released as an open frame. I don't know if it's fully open source or not, but it is now a web framework that runs all of the worst sites on the web. And I qualify that by saying the quality of a site is determined largely by whether or not you can use it without any fucking JavaScript.
And yeah, which is pretty much no website anymore.
And you can't use React without JavaScript. It is a JavaScript rendering framework for sites. I have to gloat just a little bit. I'm not at all affected by this because there is not a single site that I use regularly that uses this shit. Because if a site is made up to do rendering with client-side JavaScript, I don't want to use it. But it is a problem. It is a problem mainly for the compromise is not on the client side. The compromise is the web servers. The compromise, let's see, pull some quotes out of the articles. The Bleeping Computer had a good one. That's how I found it. But there's a site called Qualys.com, which I think is a vendor.
Qualys is they do vulnerability scanning. I encounter them in my day job. So
they had a really good write up from which I got most of my details. So I'm going to pull some. To Facebook's credit, this was disclosed on the 3rd, and by end of day on the 3rd, they had made it public, released a statement, and on the 4th, they had a fix, a new version. So they're on top of this. That's good. The problem, of course, is this is a server thing. In order to get the fix deployed, developers have to patch their local version of React on their development machine, and then they need to rebuild every app that they have, and then the site operators will continue to be vulnerable. Their servers are vulnerable up until they get updates from the developers. Now, most of the development is done in-house, so it's the site operator and the developer who usually have desks next to each other. But it's not going to be super quick. And in fact, the 3rd was what, a week and a half ago, give or take.
Days.
Yeah. As of Monday, there were still 77,000 IP addresses, according to one of the scans in one of the articles that I didn't verify, that were still confirmed as vulnerable. This is actively being exploited. As we speak, every server that hasn't been patched is almost certainly owned by now. Some examples of things that people are doing already on web servers, executing shell commands on the server to do things like dump user ID, hostname, environment variables, contents of Etsy password, the usual things that you normally don't necessarily want exfiltrated from your servers.
No, generally not.
They're tracing the internal DNSs to find and probe any other machines that are behind the firewall or in the local data center, to find vulnerabilities on those, because you always want new vulnerabilities. The moment that you have a remote code exploit, as you're well aware, this one, it actually says, oh, we can set up a shell. Well, the moment you have a remote code exploit, you can do anything. The most basic thing is you launch a shell and then find a way to log into that shell. And now you literally can act as anything on that system. Remote code exploits are bad because it's pretty much the moment you get one tiny sliver of access, you have all the access, all of it.
Well, yeah, whether you have to do an additional privilege escalation or not, it's a separate question. But you've got a foothold, yeah, you can start.
But if you're operating in the privileges of the web server.
Yeah, that's still quite a lot of it.
I mean, we're fortunate. No, most servers these days are running on something like Nginx that at least runs as a local user. I do remember the time of Apache when the web server used to run as root.
Long ago in a galaxy far, far away.
That happened. And then, of course, there's the usual things people are already actively doing in the wild. They're installing botnets, installing crypto miners. So, in case you're looking at your AWS bill and going, how come it's using 100% CPU for a month? And why do I owe Amazon $30,000? It could be because somebody exploited your React components and installed a crypto miner.
Well, of course.
creating persistent shells, other backdoors for attackers to use in the future. Basically, as the stock advice is, anytime any computer is ever compromised with a remote code execution, you have to pave and rebuild the thing. There is no antivirus that can remove an RCE. You have to pave the box. You have to rebuild the box from scratch.
Nuke from orbit. It's the only way to be sure, right? I mean, it's exactly, yeah.
So some details about how this particular one, what's actually happening. Unsafe deserialization of client-controlled data. I'm reading from the article now. Inside of React server components enables attackers to trigger remote unauthenticated execution of arbitrary commands. So how did this happen? The people who wrote React started out with a very clean design. The design was React is a client-side rendering. It downloads megabytes and megabytes of JavaScript onto the client's machine, and then the client's machine does all the rendering, and all the server does is send down data to this full-blown JavaScript app on your machine. That's how React works.
What could possibly go wrong?
To be honest, less than in this particular case, because all of the problems are on the client side. And if you are a developer or a server operator, that's where you want to push all of your security vulnerabilities is onto the client. Because if their machine gets fucked up, your server's still running, so everything's good. Maybe that's not very nice, but... I already prefaced this with, I don't think much of the type of people who develop a website entirely in a JavaScript framework. So the problem is that they kind of messed up their clean design when they realized that pushing megabytes and megabytes of JavaScript code into the client computer, especially when the client computer is, a phone or something without a lot of CPU horsepower, can be slow. So React people came up with a new thing called React Server Components, which allows you to move some of the rendering onto the server, which is, in theory, faster than most clients. So now you can get it. You can basically push a bunch of the computing for rendering the web page onto the server. But what that means is now you have to have a lot of communication between the client and server, because the app has to go to the client. The client then has to take a whole bunch of personal data and browser data and private data about the client, send it to the server, which then does all of the rendering and then sends a partially rendered page, including that data and the code and everything else, back to the client, which then finishes the rendering and displays the page. It's an improvement in terms of speed, in terms of performance. It's a goddamn security nightmare.
Well, no shit.
According to the site, React Server Components enables developers to run part of a React application rendering logic on the server rather than the browser, which reduces client-side complexity and improves performance. Under the hood, RSC uses a serialization and deserialization protocol called Flight to shuttle component trees and server function calls between client and server. I think you can guess where the problem is.
Well, duh.
What makes this CVE especially dangerous is that React server runtime was never built to handle untrusted input. It runs on the server. Traditionally, client input is sanitized and filtered by APIs before any server logic is executed. By contrast, React Server Components, which was a core feature introduced for performance, blurred the separation, allowing serialized data representing app state to travel directly between the client and server.
None of this is good.
You have the security mind, so I know you're sighing. But Phoenix, do you understand what I'm saying right now?
I zoned out when you said Meta, bro.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, you know, anything that has to do with JavaScript.
How about you run JavaScript in my left nut?
So, yeah, short version, and I know this got a little bit technical, but that's kind of what I do, is React had a nice clean separation between client and server state, and then they were like, this is too slow. Let's build a giant pipeline of app state in between them, and we've already released 1.0, and people are using it, so let's not complicate things with silly little shit like security. And so, React 2 Shell...
That's pretty standard.
React 2 Shell is somebody decoding that flight protocol, sending corrupted data into the pipeline between the server and client, and now the server is just arbitrarily executing something that someone long ago went, oh, of course this is clean, validated data.
You know, you should always... trust your data, right?
It came from the client. Don't trust it.
Exactly. So, yeah. That's probably the last place you should trust from.
So how do you hack it? Oh, it's easy. One HTTP request can set you and let you run arbitrary code on one of these servers.
Thanks, Obama.
That's all you have to do. You just visit the site with a carefully crafted query, and boom, you own it.
Yeah, that's just none of this is good. I mean, yeah, I hate dealing with those frameworks. My day job, I'm dealing with then. I have to do some things. So fortunately, the site, the platform we're using is based on older technology. So I'm dealing with like jQuery, which is pretty much all server side. But at least it's still JavaScript.
jQuery is older than most developers by now.
Yeah, probably. Well, so is FreeMarker, but that's a different thing. Oh my God. I actually had something today had something earlier this week where I'm like, okay, because yeah. And like in FreeMarker, you have a dollar sign and you put some expression in curly braces after that for variable expansion. Well, yeah. Except I needed to run something some JavaScript had some code like that. And so I had to escape it.
You know, those sort of things always work great until you have to print out a dollar sign or deal with money.
Exactly. Yes. Which is, yeah. Fortunately, if you know, it's one of those Stack Overflow things. I'm like, oh, okay. So if I do this, it's escaping it. Got it. Cause yeah, I had to explain the concept of escaping, even though it's one of those things. Yeah. If you ever do anything regular expressions JavaScript. Or shit. Yeah. It's like, you know, the backslashes from hell.
You know. Can I escape from this JavaScript framework already?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I have a parting shot to take on this. Because from the way it sounds, in order to execute the maliciousness of this, it's truly...
It's so easy, a caveman could do it.
Oh, uh-oh, honey, you're not plugged in.
Oh.
Yes, I am.
Uh-oh.
No, it didn't come over the... No.
I got,
in order to execute the maliciousness, it is truly... And then you phone boyed.
Well.
No. He fucked up my audio routing, because I'm plugged in.
I didn't touch...
I'm not muted. Why is my shit not going cross?
I have no idea.
Well, you're coming through now.
We should probably figure that out. But
or I'll just not play any fucking clips, and this show is going to be hella boring with just the two of you jacking on the mic and me interjecting occasionally if I might know what you're talking about.
Well, okay. I think you might.
I'm just seriously though. Like,
I didn't mess. No. That's not something I mess with. So
well, explain to me why I'm plugged in. All the things are the way they're supposed to be, and nobody's hearing clips. Right? You can't.
Yeah, that's something. Like I said, I have no idea, but. I heard that.
If I may further derail this train,
I heard the buzz from that. Yeah.
If I may further derail this train, it is possible that the clips are going out on the stream or into the recorder and not to clean feed. When you introduce,
heard the clip. So all right.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
There we go. I heard. Okay. Now that worked. Okay. I didn't see
when you started the show. The stream intro, like the long sequence of clips.
Yeah, that delayed by 15 seconds because I fucked something up. So,
when you started the show, you broke into the off-hour stream, and the long sequence of clips that signal that you're going live did not come through clean feed at all, but I still had VLC open so I could hear it.
Okay.
And then, right at the very end, you played one more clip that was my voice saying, holy fuck, it's Friday. Yeah. And I got that on VLC and in my headphones.
Yeah, this is different. Yeah, this is the, it's the stream. Yeah, that's the, yeah, I'm still mess. Yeah.
In other words, you fucked up.
I probably fucked up. Let me make sure I'm actually doing this my correct way.
This probably comes from, and you know there's going to be a mad ass edit. It's a good thing you're the editor, sir.
Yeah. Well,
it probably stems from the fact he had a presentation recently.
No, I don't know.
He was touching things like his soundboard during that.
No, I wasn't even touching that. Really?
Where's your mute button for your program? For your presentation.
On Zoom.
Your mute button's on Zoom?
Yeah, I don't have a Zoom.
Okay. Because I know you were muted this morning when you started talking, and I had to inform you.
No, well, this mic was muted because the whole thing routes it through there.
So the proof you touched the fucking Rodecaster. I was right.
Yes, but I didn't touch the...
Surprise, motherfucker.
I don't know why.
I was right again.
Why is it not why it's not going through this?
Well, that one came through.
Okay.
Sir Benro's heard it. I know NetNet's been feeding back that he's hearing it. Right. So, all right, let's get back to the debauchery.
I guess I'm not going to get clips, which is fine.
You're not going to get clips? I don't know why you're not getting clips.
Wait, I thought you said you did.
Because you're not routing them through CleanFeed.
I don't know why I'm not routing it through CleanFeed, but let me see what we're doing here. Let's see.
You want to pause the recording since we're obviously fucking going to have a huge edit if you don't?
Let's see what we do here. Okay, I think I know. I think I know what's going on here.
I got surprised, motherfucker, just now, but I don't know what else I'm missing.
Yeah.
You really haven't missed much. The only two I hit... was so easy a caveman can do it.
I don't know why I didn't route through. I don't
run JavaScript in my left nut. It's the only three clips I've fired today.
Yeah.
Okay. Interestingly, I got the run JavaScript in the left nut, but I never got the caveman one.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It was the setup I did for kind of the parting shot for that CVE you were bringing.
Okay. We're not going to mess with sound source right now because it's want to do an update right now. I'm doing a no.
No.
Yeah. You know what? Could we possibly make this worse? I know. Let's do a software update.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yes, exactly. All right.
It's just the way this... Hey, you know what it is? The universe is like, hey, you assholes had a week off to not do any shows. No Rideshare Radio, no Lotus Effect. I'm going to play, you know... We're going to play games here, apparently.
I'm going to play games. No, I'm going to leave all that in because fuck that. This is tech. It's tech content.
I thought you were about to say tech cocky.
Well, it's that too. I might write that down as a show title. I've got a story here. So Gartner says this, by the way. If Gartner says something, you know businesses are going to listen. Or some businesses do anyway. Block all AI browsers for the foreseeable future. Now, Gartner believes that agentic...
This sounds like a good idea. Behind it.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is starting off terrific.
Yeah, I figured you'd like this one. So agentic browsers are too risky for most organizations to use, according to the analyst firm Gartner. Yeah, the firm offered that advice last week in a new advisory entitled Cybersecurity Must Block AI Browsers for Now, in which Research VP Dennis Azu, Senior Director and Analyst Evgeny Miraluboy or something, and VP Analyst John Watts observed default AI browser settings prioritize user experience over security. Now, the analyst definitions of an AI browser encompasses tools like Perplexity's Comet and OpenAI's ChatGPT Atlas that includes two specific elements. An AI sidebar that offers users the chance to summarize, search, translate, and interact with web content using AI services provided by the browser's developer, and an agentic transaction capability that allows the browser to autonomously navigate, interact with, and complete tasks on websites, especially within authenticated web sessions. Oh, yeah, boy.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? But this was great. I thought this comment in the story was good. Yeah. The author suggests, among other things, that employees might be tempted to use AI browsers and automate certain tasks that are mandatory, repetitive, and less interesting. And imagine some instructing on AI browser to complete their mandatory cybersecurity training sessions. Yes.
Jesus. wait, pick me. Okay. You mean like your fucking company has decided that the AI or the security training is done with an AI presentation and a person who doesn't exist? No, not that. Don't look over here.
No. We didn't. This time it didn't. I don't think it had that. I think
Though, you have had one where we've had that conversation like blink twice. There's no way that person's real.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, this one, I think they finally get the message because I'm like, basically every time I had to take one of those things and ask for your feedback, I'm like, do not have AI generated things, period, dot, right? I made it very clear that I was not interested in watching training by AI, right? This, if it was done by AI, at least they didn't put any people in it. But
I'm just going to drop one of my reserve URLs that was a story I wasn't planning on bringing, but is in my notes.
And of course, it has to be Brave. The fucking very browser I use.
I was going to drop that with, what browser do you people use? Or what do you suggest for a browser that doesn't have AI in it?
Well, okay. Speaking as a Brave user, Brave is not in my face with its AI. It's there if I want to use it. The reason I use it most prominently is because when I go in, well, when I did go in before semester ended, to my environmental science, and it was like, oh, you have to, you know, accept these cookies. I was like, oh, no, I don't. And this browser is going to block all your BS pop-ups. And the only thing I'm allowing is the ones that are pertinent. So have a nice day. Drive through.
Yes. And don't install random extensions either. Because that's yeah. It's the, oh, let's install that. Yeah. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
Yes. And I know, I mean, there's this, it seems, you know, I'm watching in real time. I mean, we talked about this in other contexts. They create the problem and the solution. It seems like that this is happening in the technology industry with rapid speed now, especially with all this AI crap.
It is happening in every industry. Do not turn this into the Lotus Effect 2.0, where we're talking about how it, you know, the food system's shittiness is connected to big pharma making mad money off of the things that are being created by the shittiness of the food system. But that's the Lotus Effect. 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Central.
Yeah, I was just thinking when AI first started coming out, one of the big promises, one of the things that was being thrown around that everybody was saying, here's a huge reason why we need computers to do these things, was AI medicine. It was the idea that, oh, well, you know, a surgeon, his hand gets tired after a long surgery, but a computer doesn't. And a computer can be a lot more precise. And therefore, if we have an AI do your surgery, like they put me under and an AI starts doing my surgery, I'm getting up and running, screaming out of the fucking room.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you better hope I'm dead, let alone anesthetized, because I'm out of here.
Good Lord. But I'm kind of just scratching my head at that. It's like, why? Well, anyway, I mean, why are people using this stuff? I mean, I don't know. Every time I have to try and use it, I just like, no, really not. I mean,
Oh, phone boy. I think I actually can answer that question for you. As only half a Ben, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring on this one. People are fucking lazy. If you can have a computer do a task for you that is monotonous, even though you're getting paid buoy cooey bucks to do it, most people, and I admit it, that's what I did with my EV science.
Well, that's a bullshit
class. I hated that. Yes, it was a bullshit class. But fucking Eve got me an A because I just fed the shit in that she's programmed with. She told me the answer, or at least close enough where I could get to it. And Bob's your fucking uncle. You don't want us to use it. Don't provide access to it, folks. But that's the answer to your question. Okay? Why are people always using it? Because they're lazy and it's easier. Hello, we just watched Office Space. Imagine if Office Space had AI in it. That's all I'm saying.
That Mike Judge has a project coming up. He needs to.
Yeah. As I was saying, Mike Judge is a fucking prophet. That's all I can
truly
say.
Truly.
Yeah, except he's got his timing all wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In 2006, he thought we'd get to the world of Idiocracy in 500 years, and it took 15.
Yeah, I didn't even take that.
Oh, no. I got to tell about this. Quick side digression, but it's completely on topic of Idiocracy. Literally yelled down to Foam Boy on first floor today because I said, we are truly living in Idiocracy, and I just got confirmation. And he was like, okay, what's that?
We've been getting confirmation for a decade, but go on.
This one's even better, Sir Bemrose. I think you'll appreciate this, being one of the old people that these fucking newbie Zoomer, whatever the fuck, alpha generation retards are in.
Okay, boomer.
I know. You're going to be there someday too, in a few years even. So here's the problem. Phone Boy asks me the other day, he says, because I always use a quote from Austin Powers, you know, she went all sixes and sevens. He's like, okay. He's like, what the hell does 67 mean? I said, what are you talking about? He said, it's the new thing that I'm hearing or seeing is the young folks are using the term 67. What's that about? And I'm like, no, that's totally different than the whole sixes and sevens things I'm talking about. You go all sixes and sevens, you've gone loopy, you're batty, you're out of your mind. I don't know what this 67 thing is. I said, let me ask one of my kids. My oldest pulls up the definition. I can't make this up. It is defined as 2025's word of the year, and it literally means nothing. Nothing at all. It's a nonsense term that's being used by the alpha generation, all walking around, hey, 67, bro, 67, dude. No, dude, you sound like an idiot, and you look like even worse of one. You want to know why the world is going in the trajectory it is? It's literally a term to confuse the older people because they don't know what it means. Because it doesn't mean anything!
Yeah, and it worked for 5 minutes, and and now you know what it means, and therefore, when somebody comes up to you and is all 6'7", you can respond with the appropriate amount of scorn. Be like, okay, you're being a retard. I understand that I am now a failure because I did not provide you the intelligence or the training in order to behave in a society. So why don't you go bang your head against a rock for a while? Because that is the intellect level that you are demonstrating after all this schooling. You know, there are so many ways that you can respond to make it clear to somebody that, you know what, congratulations, you're being an idiot. Now, say something useful or I'm walking away.
Oh, yeah. I've got the perfect thing. Because if they're like, oh, 67, dude, I'm going to be like, nah, dude, you're too off.
What number are we thinking of? 69, dudes!
Also, you know, older generation thinks younger generation is stupid. News at 11.
Yeah, I'm wearing no pants. Film
that,
at 11.
That's but every,
this
every
was
humanity
the height
in
of
history.
Stupid. Truly, the word of the year is a word that means absolutely nothing.
Okay, word of the year by who?
That's what I want to know, too.
I agree. Whoever declared it word of the year, that's stupid.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I feel like that's exactly where we're at is, oh, the same person who elected President, Camacho is who decided the 2025 word of the year was
67. When you were a young kid, it was groovy and far out were the things that young kids said.
But you know what?
Annoy the
groovy
older
and far out fucking have definition. We know what groovy means. We know what far out means. 6'7" doesn't mean nothing.
It sounds like it does. It sounds like it means exactly what, because it triggered you.
The stupidity triggered me, and anyone who knows me knows I cannot tolerate stupidity. I will melt like a snow cone in August in Phoenix. Arizona, that is.
Yeah, well, okay, so you have a story, I suspect.
I have several, and it's funny because I just realized two out of the three involve the UK, but we're not going to pay attention to that necessarily.
I can laugh at the UK.
Oh, yes, and I'm absolutely sure that you will. So what I'll do is I'll present my first UK story, and then I will present the last UK story as my last sample today. I'm not letting the trolls trigger me. Bemlet can choke on his meatloaf tonight. So I find it interesting that there is a survey that has come out from a UK sexual wellness.
Wait, that was meatloaf? That looked like the tastiest lasagna I'd ever seen. Oh, I'm sorry.
It was flat. That looked more like a meat burger, not a meat loaf. But I'm not judging the cooking.
That's the best lasagna is all meat.
I can't deny that. Dude, can you imagine that? Okay, so fourth wall break. Can you imagine me taking just like sheets of ground beef and like layering cheese and some shit in between them and calling it like a meat lasagna? That's a true meat lasagna.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah,
Sir Pemrose is like, I'll buy that for a dollar.
I'll drive right over.
Right? Does that ship well? All right. So, now we're finding out that Sir Pemrose has had Bemlet's meatloaf. I have a feeling that has a double entendre. I'm not touching it. Just saying.
Yeah, me either. I don't touch it anymore.
Well, that's because you don't live together anymore. Okay, we're not going there. This is not the Lotus Effect. Tighten up, you degenerates. This surprised me because I did not realize that the company Love Honey is a UK wellness retailer, sexual wellness retailer, but apparently they are. And they have loomed large in the realm of love in 25 and set to loom even larger in 26, according to them. And it's interesting because what they're talking about is that more than 52% of people are turning to AI for sexual advice, which is down from, or which, not down, but...
Which is crazy because AI hasn't had sex. And AI is trained on people who post incessantly on the internet who aren't having sex either.
The internet is for porn. AI is trained on
porn. The people who are having sex are not the ones putting hundreds and hundreds of posts into Facebook and Reddit, thus training the AI.
Correct. This is the modern version of the penthouse letters and the Playboy letters in the back of the mag. Who the fuck ordered, who bought that magazine for the letters? I know I didn't. I bought that shit for the centerfold, motherfuckers. But back to what we're talking about here.
I only read it for the captions.
You're lying and you know it. And the cat has told stories. You think dogs talk, but anyway. The thing about this is that people are treating AI as their sex therapist. And it's really interesting because it's more men than women. And it's the Gen Zs, the millennials, that are doing this. And while getting a bit of sex advice from ChatGPT might sound harmless, the experts, of course, we know what experts are, but in this case, they might not be so wrong, because they're warning against using AI as a therapist, stating that the risks of doing so, like it becoming a harmful feedback loop, they're not worth it. Why did that actually have to be stated? Those of us with functioning brains already knew that.
I'm going to have to briefly rush to the defense of these lonely incels who are turning to ChatGPT to get their rocks off. And it's pretty easy. ChatGPT, if you say something inappropriate, will just ban you. What it won't do is get cops called on you.
Browsers.com.
I'm just saying, we live in a world now where it is a legal liability to go out and talk to the opposite sex. Ever since Me Too and calling the cops and screaming sexual assault every time somebody asks you for your phone number became a thing, it is legally a bad idea for people to go out and try to continue the human race. Our society is litigious, and we're in the age of feminism where any sort of, anybody who looks at you is obviously undressing you with their eyes. Actually, men do that, but
don't think women don't do it either.
Well, I don't know. Last time I was undressed by a woman, I was like, nope, way ahead of you, bitch.
That's no way to talk about the dame.
She chuckled.
She knows we love her.
she's over there tending the fire right now.
The interesting thing is, you said that, and yet, okay, the trend they're also seeing is that daters are also shifting their love lives away from the digital realm, turning instead to real life connections. There's been a rise in offline dating events. With singles flocking to single nights, including speed dating, coffee shop dates. Apparently that's a thing. Who knew about that? Run clubs, all kinds of...
Because in today's hectic world, you can get the sex to go faster if you're both heavily caffeinated.
I mean, that's not a lie. Caffeinated rabbit sex. Now, it's interesting because they're mentioning in this article dating app fatigue being at an all-time high, and that more singles are starting to turn to real-life connections, and that 30% of Gen Zs have met a sexual or romantic partner through a dating app, compared to 35%.
Nature is healing.
Yeah. With dating apps in decline, we're seeing the return of analog intimacy from office romances to speed dating nights. This trend could unfold in stark contrast to technological advancements, with technology itself seducing us through AI dating coaches, digital threesomes, and fantasy-fueled escapism. That shit's been here the whole time! I can assure you, 50, 100 years ago, people were still having fantasy-fueled escapes.
I can assure you that the dating apps have changed, but the behavior of people, like, IRC was my dating app.
So it was mine too.
And look how well it worked out for one of you.
Yeah, it worked because I found, you know, I have a wife.
Yeah, a good wife. It didn't work out so good for Phone Boy.
It worked out good for you with you and E, though.
We didn't meet on IRC. We met, oh, fuck off. We did meet in an IRC chat room.
Bowl After Bowl was your dating app.
Hey! There you go. The Bowl After Bowl dating app. Putting couples together since 2020.
I don't know, whatever they've... Yeah, I'm sure they've... we should... Yeah,
but I mean, I know that they're talking about dating apps like...
Tinder is one of
them. No, Tinder wasn't... I mean, obviously, fucking swipe right for...
Grindr.
VD. Yeah, Grindr. Whatever. Again, you know, swipe for VD. I was more thinking that one... God, I can't remember the damn name of it. It's the one that literally is made to be deleted. Oh, my God. Come on, you guys. Help me out. What's the...
There is no fucking way I'm helping you out with the name of a dating app. For one thing, I haven't actually been in a position where I needed a dating app in 25 years. And secondly, I just told you that my wife is sitting right here in this room.
I know. I'm like, no. She'll throw a fucking... fireplace poker at him if he knows the name of any dating apps. But anyway, there is a dating app out there that literally...
She says ICQ.
Yeah, jeez.
Uh-oh! Wait, well done, well done.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you hit the uh-oh? That was good.
No,
I did. I think he did,
Oh,
actually.
That was you, Sir Remrose. Well done. I didn't have it on deck, but yeah. Like I said, I can't remember the name of it, but literally that's what it's advertised as, you know, the dating app that's made to be deleted. It's like, how about just not creating it in the first place and go out and meet people?
It's an app. They're all made to be deleted.
That's a good point. Holy crap. Going through my mom's phone the other day and looking at just the arbitrary shit when we turned it back on, all these notifications from apps that it's like, why did you have this on your phone? I do not understand. But... No, it wasn't Reddit or Craigslist, Ned. I swear to God, I'm going to find this stupid ad on YouTube so I can find it. And Tinder keeps running through my mind, and I know it's not called Tinder, but I can't, because I don't need a dating app. I have my one and only. The only thing that separates us from Sir Bemrose and Dame Bemrose is a ring and vows. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And like 18 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mama said she met Dad through through ICQ.
Yeah, I see that as well. Now, you know what? You go on to your next story. It is my life mission. I'm going to find this fucking app so I know the name so I don't feel stupid.
This show is already off the rails. We've been here for, what, 55 minutes now, and we've done one story each?
What else is new?
Yeah, well, there's that.
Hey, we've been off mic for a week. Give us a break.
Fair enough. I've got a couple that are slightly political adjacent, but still tech related ish. How about Python Foundation refuses a grant because it's not willing to be bound by anti-DEI rules?
You're kidding.
Womp womp. Yeah.
Now, admittedly, this story was from October. I don't usually let that stop me considering how often I podcast. You know, if you want fresh news, go to YouTube or something. But from the Python Software Foundation's release, we became concerned when we were presented with the terms and conditions we would be required to agree to if we accepted the grant. These terms included affirming the statement that we do not and will not, during the term of this financial assistance award, operate any programs that advance or promote DEI or discriminatory equity ideology in violation of federal anti-discrimination laws. This restriction would apply not only to the security work directly funded by the grant, but to any and all activity of the PSF as a whole. Further, violation of this term gave the NSF the right to claw back previously approved and transferred funds. This would create a situation where money we'd already spent could be taken back, which would be an enormous open-ended financial risk. Okay, that last part I understand. The idea of accepting funds that can be clawed back, there's some sense to that. But the only way that you would make this big a deal about something like this is if you already intended to violate those terms, wouldn't it be? Does that make sense?
Sounds very logical to me as a theory.
They also said they can't agree to a statement that we won't operate any programs that advance or promote diversity, as it would be a betrayal of our mission to our community.
Okay, so let me.
So if you are a programmer or computer user in the Python community, this is what they think of you.
Are we surprised by this?
That their mission is not to provide you a useful programming language or secure libraries or software that is, I don't know, stable, resistant to remote code exploits. No, they believe their mission is to advance and promote diversity. Now, I don't know about you, that's not actually software that I want, because it's not why I select software. I kind of select software on the basis of it not fucking over my computer.
Yeah, the whole doesn't break shit model.
There wasn't much in this article. It was from Ars Technica, though, so they went on to spend like the last 12 paragraphs describing all of the wonderful new features and tools that Python wanted to make, but they can't make now because of the big bad Trump administration.
Oh, what a surprise. Trump bad, Orange Man bad. More bullshit on that.
I mean, this did come from the Trump order that said, hey, you know, we're going to go ahead and follow federal law, and that means that discriminating by race is technically illegal, and therefore Trump put out that whole order that said no DEI, and a lot of organizations are having a lot of trouble with that idea. I know the Python language. I don't directly support the Python Software Foundation, mainly because I'm a cheapskate. But I tell you what, if I were the kind of person who were tempted to donate to a foundation in charge of a language that I liked or wanted to use, Python would no longer be anywhere near the list, because now I know that really what they want to exist for, the whole reason they want donations, is so that they can be racist against white people.
Yeah, because as we know, and I'll say it because I'm the one who constantly touts the fact, don't be racist, that's my job. Yeah. They are making a very broad statement about the fact that if you're not a minority, GTFO. That's how I'm hearing it.
Yeah, well, we know those folks are not.
But if you think about it, white folks are the minority now. I'm sorry, and I'm not putting it out there and being political. I have a big problem with the fact that it's all well and fine for people of color, okay, the pigment-enhanced folk, to call us whitey, cracker, honky, and all that shit, okay? But holy Christ on crack, if you call him a coon or a spook or something, you're a racist. No, if you're an N-word, you're an N-word. Don't act like one, won't be called one. I ain't acting like it, don't call me that, because that's not going to work well for you. Because if you don't think I will, to your face, tell you that you're failing as a human being, you obviously ain't been listening to my shows, and you don't know me.
I'm gonna briefly give my really quick version of my rant. Let's put aside that, there are six different variations of Pacific Islander and, 17 different tribes all in, you know, the 1 square mile area of the Amazon forest. And just saying white is already, you're shifting the goalposts on categorization, because there's like 25 different distinct ethnicities that all seem to be lumped into white. Okay, fine. But even if you put white as all one group, which every single person who categorizes people by skin color seems to do, that's like 8% of people in the world. Don't go calling that a minority or a majority. That is absolutely a minority. Where are the physical places in the world that are mostly quote unquote white people? Well, that would be Europe and North America, really. You know, half of the US and most of Canada and a good chunk of Europe are basically the only places where white people are quote unquote indigenous, at least in the last 100 years. So let's correspond that with where are all the places that are getting totally invaded by all of this illegal immigration? Okay. Enough of that.
Dude, am I hearing a JCD chair squeak over there?
No, what you heard was the door to the to the wood stove.
Ah, well, yes.
Which can't be greased because grease is flammable.
No, no, that would end really badly. Zero stars. But, I mean, you're more or less proving the point very eloquently, Sir Bemrose. And I'm not trying to make this racial, but...
That's what I do.
I mean, at the end of the day, look around America, as Dame DeLorean says. We are the minority now. And the more the Democrats fucking... people are losing their minds because of ICE and the fact that Trump is being like, you're not here legally.
They didn't have much GTFO. To begin with.
And that's the position I stand on. If you're not here legally, and that's why I completely support the visa thing. What is it? H1B or whatever the hell it is.
Yes.
Get the fuck out. You're not here legally. All you're doing is sponging off of our tax dollars. Get the fuck out. Take you and the shitty-ass Democrats that brought you here by plane, by bus, by hook, or by crook, and get the fuck out.
Yeah, they should be willing. If they're willing to bring them into the country, they should be willing to house them in their own compound. Just saying.
I'm going to drop my second really small, sort of politically adjacent one. This actually isn't political at all, or at least it shouldn't be. It just turns out that some of the reporters, like 404 Media, decided to make it political, which is why I didn't grab their URL. But this has to do with a person from Georgia who is a musician, according to TechSpot, an activist, according to 404 Media, whatever. Guy by the name of Samuel Tunick, from Atlanta, Georgia, who on January 25th, for reasons that are not described in any article, was stopped by Customs and Border Patrol, in particular their quote-unquote elite unit called the Tactical Terrorism Response Team. I don't know what the hell that's about, but when this, if he was an activist, I can probably guess that he was trying to stir something up and they stopped him, but that's one guess. It's also possible. January 25th was 4 days into the Trump administration. I don't know that they were organized enough yet that they were going to be harassing people. Don't know what the hell happened back in January, but what we have now is an indictment, and Samuel Tunick was arrested for, according to the indictment, he, quote, did knowingly destroy, damage, waste, dispose of, or and otherwise take any action to delete the digital contents of a Google Pixel cellular phone. He hit the nuke key on his phone when he was about to be arrested. And they caught him doing that. The phone was erased, but now they have him on destroying evidence. The reason that I brought this is because we have heard quite a lot of the idea of, well, keep your phone locked, keep your phone from being, taken by the feds, whoever. And I've heard a lot of people talk about, we've got this thing that's got a special ability that, you punch in the wrong pin, for example, and it'll wipe the drive. Oh, good. How many Hollywood movies have we seen where somebody, clicks a button and suddenly all of the computers in their office catch fire or something like that?
The problem is Apple OS has this. It's literally a feature that you can enable in case your phone gets stolen, where you can punch in some code or hit one button and nuke from orbit.
Well, you can do it with Find My also.
Yeah, this one was a Pixel, but you can always install backup apps. Let's imagine for a moment that the guy knew what the hell he was doing and actually intended and was able to destroy this. The part that really hit me, because it's not an angle I'd ever thought of, was, this is actually destroying evidence.
It is, but at the same time, as someone who's begun a digital forensics course before having to drop because I got over my head, he thinks he destroyed it all. I assure you, they'll be able to recover the information off that phone that they need to recover. It's not gone. You just think it is.
Maybe that is, but I guess the place where I'm coming from is it is the digital version of, having the cops pound on the door saying, open up, police, and you grab a sheaf of papers and throw it into a fireplace.
That's exactly what it is like. Or like in the movie Hackers, where when the cops are pounding on his door, he takes these huge magnets and just, you know, his fucking whole data center.
And we've seen that in lots of media that, you know, there's various...
back when you could demagnetize now you can't do that.
Unless... Well, okay. If you have a stock operating system that is controlled by a Silicon Valley company that runs, you know, runs command and control for your bed into or through the cloud, then there's always going to be another copy of it somewhere. I'm sorry, did I just tease one of the other stories that I brought? However, assuming that you're capable of destroying it, I guess where I'm at is it never occurred to me that that would be illegal. And yes, it fits the definition of destroying evidence, which, you know, you're totally cool if you want to nuke your phone right now. But the moment that the cops are pounding on your door and you have reasonable, you know, a reason to believe that they're going to want the information on your phone, laws of evidence mean that you are now duty bound to preserve that, which goes entirely against all of the advice and everything that we've been given that says, oh, you know, like even, I mean, obviously there's a gray area with, it's still on the phone, but it's all encrypted, which is actually what the article recommends. But deleting the data is, I guess I brought it up because it blew me away that, oh, yeah, that really is destroying evidence.
It is, and it's sad that it's come to that, but this is the age we live in. And like I said, people who think that, oh, well, I deleted it, I this, I that. Let me show you, I can hook one cord up, punch a couple of buttons, and all the shit you thought you deleted, I've got on this nice little USB drive right here that I'm going to turn over to the FBI because that's my fucking job! As a digital forensic technician.
I guess my counterpoint would be this phone that's right next to me, assuming that I kept anything on it that could incriminate me. I don't use the damn thing because I don't install apps. That really limits the amount of data that could incriminate me on the phone. But if there is data on this phone that I wanted to delete, I don't have a Google account. I don't have any cloud accounts. My data is not automatically uploaded to anywhere. I actually can make this data go away with a hammer.
Oh, exactly.
Just saying it's possible.
100%.
It's not possible for the kind of person who goes out and buys an iPhone and then uses their Apple Find My for, you know, to locate the bathroom.
True. However, I will casually remind you, and Phone Boy, you geniuses of tech, there is no cloud. It's simply someone else's computer.
Yes. All Sometimes right. it's somebody else's botnet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, I got one here. So we have over 10,000 Docker Hub images found leaking credentials and off keys. Well, this is almost as bad as in the
water is wet.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. So Docker. Okay, Docker is. A method for packaging applications with all of its dependencies, so you install it as sort of one sort of blob, right? So you don't have to worry about whether your operating system has all of the, you know, the stuff.
The meme about it was that you have a programmer or a user saying, "I can't get it to work," and the programmer says, "Works on my machine," and then the senior programmer comes in and says, "Well, then let's ship your machine," and that's how Docker was born.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. Well, the problem is that people had live credentials to production systems, CICD databases, or LLM model keys. This secrets impact a little over 100 organizations. Among them are a Fortune 500 company and a major national bank. Oh, boy. Docker Hub is the largest container registry where developers upload, host, share, and distribute ready-to-use Docker images that contain everything necessary to run an application.
Wait, hold.
I just have to ask a quick question, Sir Memorous, before you do. Who owns Docker?
I don't actually.
I thought it was open source.
I think it's like Red Hat.
Wow,
or something.
I don't think I've ever heard like that number of crickets all at once when I asked a question. Way to go, guys.
Well, I don't use Docker.
No, I don't either. Docker's a pain.
Nor do. Well, no, I can't say nor do I. I don't have an account, but I know we've had to use it with the schoolwork we've done in person.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, but it's just a way of installing things. But yeah, I mean, even I don't use it on my. Yeah, no, I don't want to do that. I think we had some product that actually, and I think have a couple of products that actually do distribute like a Docker.
I just want you to reiterate what you said to clarify, because what I just heard is there is a service called Docker Hub, which is effectively a. Oh, you created an app in a Docker container, which is how a lot of apps are shipped. You know, a developer gets something working just barely on their own machine. They can't figure out how to get it to install anywhere else, but they don't care because they just wrap up the container and be like, here. And they upload the image of what is effectively a hard drive image that contains this app installed in whatever. And you're telling me that people are uploading their credentials in these giant hard drive blobs.
That's exactly what he just said.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
If you can go through and sanitize the environment that you're wrapping up, which, by the way, is particularly difficult and requires an amount of effort commensurate with, I don't know, making the software installable. But if you can get through and you can sanitize it, then I understand Docker Hub as a means of distributing some application that you can't be fucked to make installable on another computer.
Well, yeah,
this is like taking my VM folder and just uploading it to the cloud and being like, here, everybody, there is no possible way that you can do that and sanitize it so that it doesn't have sensitive data.
Pretty much. I mean, well, I would also say that, okay, so we were asking a question, who owns Docker? Well, Docker is a standalone company, apparently. Not that it really matters, but yeah, Docker, there's also some other security things around Docker insofar as that it does some sort of...
I would like to point out the location of this company.
Yeah, I understand. We know it's a Silicon Valley company, all right?
Nope. Look more specifically. We won't put that on an air. I just want you to notice where it says in Silicon.
Yeah, I'm aware of exactly where it is.
It's nothing that has that particular name associated with it, nothing good can come of this.
It's Palo Alto, okay? Yeah, we already know, all right?
And we know how shitty and how many CVEs Palo Alto has on the reg. They're not, no. Palo Alto is a company. Docker is a company, two separate entities. But they are headquartered in Palo Alto, California. I'm saying the irony behind that is not lost when you know how insecure Palo Alto as a security company is.
I wasn't going to go there, but...
Oh, but I did, because I can, because it doesn't affect my day job, sir.
Yes, but yes, of course, the entire, you know, of course, now, developers typically use Docker images to streamline the entire software development and deployment lifecycle. Yes. However, as past studies have shown, carelessness in creating these images can result in exposing secrets that remain valid for extended periods of time. And after scanning container images uploaded to a Docker Hub in November, security researchers at threat intelligence company Flare found that 10,456 of them exposed one or more keys. Now, the most frequent secrets were access tokens for various AI models, such as OpenAI, Hugging Face, Anthropic, Gemini, Grok. In total, the researchers found 4,000 such keys.
Okay, so if I may, for a moment, let me make sure I am understanding what you're saying. So this AI that's already as insecure as a slide bolt on a prison is using Docker. And you can backdoor this thing through this breach, so you could literally have this AI completely off its rocker talking to people.
Well, no, it has. It says the key. These apps use AI, and that's why they have keys to be able to access the API in the back end.
Was that not just, in different terms, what I just said? Is that somebody could get that key and backdoor that AI,
or use that, or but mostly what they're doing when they're getting a token to use to access an AI is, yeah, they're going to use the AI themselves, right?
To upload malicious code that goes out to other people. Follow the bouncing thought bubble.
Yeah, but sometimes they're doing that. Sometimes they're just using the damn, you know, using somebody else's credit, basically, which, you know, it's stealing
shit.
Oh,
you mean because it costs money to use?
I'm
going to
take this one step farther, actually. Because this stuff is posted publicly, and because we know that AI companies have a very, very loose interpretation of what copyright means, these leaks have already been used to train the next generation of AI models, which means that you don't need somebody to come and backdoor all these systems, because ChatGPT is going to do it in the next version. You're just going to be like, you're going to be like, please give me access to this company, you know, to this bank's website. And ChatGPT will be, hey, no problem. Here's a Python script that will go ahead and connect to a remote shell inside of their server.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, speaking of AIs and copyright violation, so yeah, I've gotten a notification about this this class action lawsuit against Anthropic for basically using training their AI on copyrighted works. One of them was actually a book that I wrote. So it was like more than 20 years ago at this point. But yeah, I actually went and filed. I went and, you know. Like, okay, I might get some money out of this. We'll see. You know, they said,
like $1.50?
Well, actually, they're saying like up to $3,000. It's depending upon, you know, what your knowledge.
Yeah. Which after the lawyer fees will be about $1.50.
Yeah, exactly. I figured,
not wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But in the fact, I mean, I've seen plenty of stories. Like, I'm trying to remember if I've got it in the Lotus script, but yeah, I keep running into these things. It's like these companies are going to sue each other into oblivion because, Disney, who wrote the damn copyright laws, is upset that people are violating those laws. I mean, are we surprised? And, you know,
hello, pot, it's the kettle calling.
Yeah. Considering,
I've always been of the opinion that copyright laws were far too excessive in the direction of the copyright holders. And I understand the controversy around it, but it's hard not to kind of give a little cheer that, hey, suddenly all these AI companies find themselves on the other side and also agreeing that copyright has gone too far.
Well, yeah.
I almost had Darren pull a gun on me during one Grumpy Old Ben's episode because I was insisting that copyright should not last more than 5 years.
By the way, I remember that episode, and I happen to fucking agree with it, by the way. I mean, it used to be, I think, because I remember this because, it used to be 20 years and then you could renew it for another 20 or something, but that was it, right? I mean, you had to actually, it was not a...
Yeah,
was,
20 years when the time from typing the last word in the manuscript to getting out to market saturation was something like a year and a half because of the time that it took to print things and, you know, physically move things around and get trucks to take things to bookstores and then do the marketing. Yeah. Okay. In at that speed, 20 years might have been reasonable, but right now, if I write something that's copyrighted and I click the last character, I can within 5 seconds click publish and it is out in the world for everybody to find. 5 years is not too damn much to be able to capitalize on that.
Well, this reminds me of the story we ran across. I don't remember if we're covering it on Lotus Effect or not, about how PBS and NPR, since they've become defunded, there's a company out there, organization, that is fighting for... Help me out, Phoneboy. You're the one who found this story. The NPR PBS thing reminds me of this copyright thing.
Well, no, it's because, well, they're, you know, they're, no, this is, it's not really even a tech story. It's basically,
no, it's not.
Yeah, they're getting, because they basically, they're the FCC folks are threatening to pull their licenses because, yeah, we've defunded NPR and PBS because they propagate
fake news.
No, yeah, because they're obvious. Yeah, they're fake news. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure Tigger's listening to this show, yelling at her stream right now. It's not fake news. She's an NPR gal. Love her bunches.
Yeah, but it is.
Exactly. So,
but the whole reason
you're allowed to like it, just like I'm allowed to listen to an audiobook of some fantasy world where elves and demons fight in, you know, with swords and laser blasters. That can be a very fantastic and entertaining story, but it's not real. NPR is like that.
Fucking Sir Bemrose just triggered me behind the microphone. I'm cracking a seltzer yelling, "Trigger!" Fucking Ayn Rand. And Atlas Shrugged. No, I can't. I spent 30 minutes trying to listen to this book because I got it on Audible. And I looked at Phoneboy and I went, nope. This is like a sandpaper dildo with no KY. I cannot listen to this book.
Go try watching the movies instead.
No! If the book is that bad, I'm not going to get through the movie.
Yeah, about 15 minutes into the movie, you're going to sit here and be like, maybe I'll try the book again.
Jeez. Well,
I'm willing.
In fairness, I'm willing.
But that read was drier than Sex with No Lube. And no, I couldn't get past.
And before Phoneboy, you were used to that. So,
Oh, right. You wish. Seriously, though, in all honesty, a book has to grab my attention within the first. Honestly, if it's not within the first chapter, I'm putting it down. It has to be interesting. This book was neither interesting nor, in my opinion, well written. People have fapped over Ayn Rand for fucking years. There's even a clip. And I'm sure Phoneboy's about to pull it up. I see his fingers moving over there.
So it's not for you. Fine, go get the Cliff Notes. Read the Wikipedia article. Well, not Wikipedia.
I'm at the point you can get the lesson. I might give the movie a chance.
Well, there's three of them.
Okay, I might give the movies a chance.
Oh.
But the movies.
I've read the book and I couldn't make it through the movies.
Well, okay. So in other words, it's looking like Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead are probably not going to be consumed by yours truly, nor will Fahrenheit 451. With how boring
go read State of Fear.
It
it's much more entertaining.
I was truly zoning out during it. It didn't keep my attention.
Okay. What do you need? Like 50 Shades of Grey?
No, I think Snow Crash is the greatest fucking thing I've ever read.
Yeah, that gets you in the first page.
Exactly. That's a book I need. I need it to hook me and keep me interested through the whole ride. You don't get my attention in the first, 10 minutes, I'll even say. I'm setting it down. And I own these books, I'm pretty sure, in physical form. I'd like to return them. I will never read them. I cannot handle a read that is so dry. I'll stop.
I have the books, but
while I certainly understand that as a commentary on the books, at some point, you know, the reader also may need to be examined here because, if you're only reading for entertainment, then you know, obviously the phone book is out, but. I mean, how do you get information?
Dude, who the fuck has a phone book anymore? I'm being serious. Do they even still put them out?
I think I have one somewhere in the clutter in this house.
I was going to say, this thing's probably an antique.
We still got them occasionally when I lived on Wisteria Lane. So, I mean, they
I
were
don't
a
remember
little...
the last time.
I remember actually paying money to the phone company to not have my name included.
Oh, yeah. I remember the days of being unlisted.
Those extortionist fuckers.
It was $10.
Anyway.
Dude, at this point, that's a pack of cigarettes in most states.
Yeah, but also, $10 was actual money back then.
I was going to say.
After inflation, that's like $150 today.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm not disagreeing. Like, I'm old enough to remember back when you had unlisted numbers and you actually had a phone that was made of Bakelite. And you had a dial on it and you rotated that dial in correspondence with numbers. And it's amazing. Somebody on the other end picked up a set, hello?
Yeah, like, what is this weird plastic coil that runs from the phone to the wall? I can't go to my room with the phone with this.
Oh my God, so funny story, fourth wall break. I'm a teenager. My parents bought a long phone cord because I would always be on the phone, like, no matter what I was doing. Homework, cooking, dishes, didn't matter. I was on the phone. And I can remember cooking one day and the phone, the long cord, like somehow made its way over the burner. And I had to grab the cord real quick so it didn't melt it. And my, I had a friend
I know
school.
People who refused in the era when the corded phones, the ones with wires were kind of going out of style. So this was a little later, but cordless phones were everywhere. I know somebody who refused to ever purchase a cordless phone. They made sure that every phone in their house had wires attached to the wall in the kitchen, the wall in the living room, because they knew if they ever purchased a cordless phone, it would disappear into the daughter's bedroom and never be seen again.
Well, and not to think about the fact that running on the 2.5 spectrum, you could pick up phone conversations on a scanner.
Actually, in the old days, it used to be at 900 megahertz.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah,
which was better than the 2.5 because I can tell you I was the kind of kid who would turn on the microwave when I wanted to interrupt someone's conversation.
Well, no, is
that's funny.
Well, yeah, of course, I remember the days where you were using a modem and all somebody had to do was pick up the phone and you were fucked, you know.
Dude, literally, when he was talking about turning the microwave on to fuck up somebody's phone call, my thought immediately went to the cuckoo's egg where he was jingling his keys over the thing for crosstalk.
Yeah, funny.
See? I'm still a geek, even if I don't like Ayn Rand.
I used to have magical speakers on my computer desk. They knew when a cell phone call was coming in.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
That's funny.
Okay, so I think it's your turn for a story, honey.
It is, and it's interesting because I got one that was so short when I copy-pasted it, I thought, this is beautiful. And then when I started doing the cut-down, I've got maybe a paragraph. And it consists of possibly six sentences. So the worst thing about AI is that people can't shut the fuck up about it. The technology has been iterating and evolving for decades. This particular moment of AI fantasism specifically refers to the deep learning approach of training AI models on reams of data. Yes, it might seem technically intimidating, but it is truly not that profound. I disagree. Of course, unless you're mainlining the intoxicating stream of hype being spewed by visionary tech marketers like Sam Altman and Dario Amodei. In which case, why are you even here? Get to the bunker! Because the fact is, AI is incredibly expensive and resource extractive to train, to deploy, and to commercialize. And then to lather, rinse, and repeat with more data. New models, more promises, new warnings, and so on. Forever and ever, amen, until we flip out about quantum in a few years, which we all know it may or may not occur. But a growing number of signs indicate that it's an economic bubble. And we've been talking about that on this show for several episodes, that this is going to end up being a lot like the AI bubble, and just at some point, it's going to pop. Companies are going to be scrambling to employ humans, not computers and LLMs, to do the job. Our advice here at 2.5 Bens is whatever you do, don't become friends with an AI or have cyber sex with it. Make sure your kids still have a human teacher.
Unless it's hot.
Down, boy. Dame Bemrose must have gone in the other room. Look, yes. The world's always changing. And technology didn't begin with ChatGPT. And the worst thing about AI might be the fact that we can't stop talking about it. And I think that that's, in a nutshell, this was a Wired article where the writer spent...
It was a Wired article. You could finish out the podcast. Bone Boy and I could just...
No, seriously, like the writer spent probably an entire paragraph to two paragraphs, and I'm not exaggerating, fapping and bitching about how they didn't want to write a piece on this and everybody's asking their opinion and blah, 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 blah.
So he held himself back.
It was a she, actually. She, okay. No, I just cut out a lot of the fap because to some degree, she was kind of being wishy-washy, in my opinion, because on one hand, she's saying, well, it's really not that bad. But then on the other hand, in the next sentence, it's like, oh, it's expensive and it's resource extractive to train and yada, 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 yada. It's very easy. Just don't use AI, period.
So I'll offer one counterpoint to what was said. And I think that there is at least one fundamental shift that is exceptional about the current era of worshiping LLMs in Silicon Valley. And that is, it marks one of the first times that the industry as a whole has started listening to marketers and enthusiasts ahead of engineers. It is one of the first technologies to come out of Silicon Valley where the people who wrote it don't really understand it. And that bothers engineers. But the direction of the company is being decided by the people who look at this and say, oh, good, it can make julienne fries. And I didn't ask julienne about whether or not she wants that. But the engineers do not understand what is going on here. They're just like, well, we tried it and this happened. And then the marketers got a hold of it and are like, great, we can say it'll do anything. And I think that that is the big departure from previous Silicon Valley hype fads. Whereas, you know, they may have been pushing for some kind of thing that wasn't ready. At least somewhere there was an engineer who was like, yeah, I understand the state of this and I kind of know how it's working. There isn't anyone with these LLMs. Nobody understands what they're doing or how they work.
No, and they're not seeming to want to try to find, understand, and install
guardrails
on them because it's
not
profitable.
There aren't any companies paying people to understand them because that might make the magic go away.
Apparently not very well. You know as well as I do that I have stopped bringing these AI stories to the other show, Phoneboy and I do, about how, you know, in our Lotus Tech Tips, about how, oh, this LLM convinced this person that they could fly, so they jumped out a window, or, oh, this person convinced their, you know, this LLM convinced a person their mom was Hitler, so they murdered her. I've stopped bringing stories like that because, honestly, it would encompass the entire show if that's all I did because they're so numerous. Nobody gets
anyone,
it. And everybody, I won't say everybody, because more or less the people who listen to this show are not having a relationship with a chatbot. They're probably not overusing AI because they're lonely and fat and sad.
That they know of.
Yeah. How do I know you're not chatbots?
I'm a Perl script, sorry.
I was going to say, Phoneboy's a Perl script, and damn it, just to annoy you, Sir Bemrose, I'm a fucking JavaScript.
Well, in that case, I must be PowerShell. How do you feel talking about to me now?
Oh, my.
Feel dirty being on Clean Feed with me, doesn't it?
Well, there's a reason we
Sir
call
Bemrose,
it
Sir Bemrose, talking to you on Clean Feed always makes me feel dirty. I have to have a shower afterward.
Yeah. All right,
you don't bring stories about people. Oh, ChatGPT told me to kill myself. Well, you know, maybe that shouldn't be a story. Maybe we should just like, I'm going to go into asshole mode here and say, maybe when ChatGPT tells you to kill yourself and you believe them, then okay, end of story as far as I'm concerned. You go do what you're going to do and the rest of us, you're not affecting society anymore. Eventually,
yeah, it seems like
all of the people who are
susceptible
to that sort of thing will be gone, and all of the people who don't trust the AI are we can build a beautiful society without all the morons who are I don't know.
Again, I think what you're basically trying to say in a very sweet tight
is,
little package
is let's take all the warning labels
selection.
Off of things and let's take the warning labels off of things and just let stupidity solve itself.
Yeah, Darwinism, man.
Yeah, well, no, well, that, you know, we got to keep the legal system going. But anyway, that's...
I still say
I only brought two AI stories for my notes, and both of them were reserve stories.
I see. Well, do you have any other stories that you want to share, though? Because it is...
I do.
Okay,
well, I do.
Well, then go on.
And again, we're going back to October for this one because October, a lot of things happened that I hadn't really, this is entertaining enough. Just don't mind the old news. There is a company, I did not know about this company before I read this, this story, a company called 8sleep, EIGHT, 8sleep. They make a smart bed.
The last thing I need is a smart bed, but go on.
My bed emails me. It's over.
Well, and you know what? I've said enough. You can already tell exactly where this story is going.
Just
but
by our bullshit snark over here shooting shits in.
You,
we're like,
you already
oh,
know.
We just spoiler
but I'm
alerted.
Gonna go ahead, I'm going to go ahead and give you the details so that we can all have a chuckle and a little bit of schadenfreude. So back in October, when the AWS went out, the smart beds stopped responding to commands. And the Tech Radar article that I dropped quoted some tweets like, well, it sure would be great if my bed wasn't stuck in an inclined position due to an AWS outage. Another one says, well, the backend outage means I'm sleeping in a sauna, which takes a little bit of explanation, but not much. See, the feature of the 8 Sleep Pod, which is the name of their smart bed, it monitors all of your sleeping biometrics and sends them, of course, to the cloud. I don't even have to tell you these things. This is what Internet of Things smart devices do. It monitors your sleep, your circadian rhythms, how much time you spend looking at a screen, whatever it does, whatever data it can collect, it sends to the cloud. Of course it does. We know this. This is what they do. But the only feature, at least the only feature I could see on the Tech Radar article or from a really brief perusal of their website, is that it monitors your temperature and then adjusts the temperature of the bed to make sure that your body temperature is always up or down, however it is, to give you a comfortable sleep.
What the hell if you like being cooler or warmer when you sleep?
Well, presumably you use the app to set your preferences and it'll keep you at whatever temperature. This, by the way, is a function that could easily be done in a local chip inside of the smart bed. But
completely. No internet phasing required.
They send it to the cloud. And then the cloud sends down commands that make the temperature of the bed change. Or, if you pull your app up, you can hit a button that says incline or decline. And it sends that command to the cloud. The cloud then sends a command to the bed, which tells it to move up or down.
What the hell ever happened to a remote control?
That's what it is. It's an app that's a remote control.
No, I mean a physical thing you put in your hand with buttons.
Yes, that's what your phone is.
Up button, down button. Like temperature up button, temperature down button.
You are so stuck in 2004. What do you mean? What kind of control are you talking that isn't your smartphone?
I know. It's like there didn't used to be beds with frames that had these
The only device that people touch is a smartphone.
Handheld devices that weren't smartphones with buttons
if there's not
down,
an app,
left.
It's a boomer device.
Apparently.
Get in the 21st century.
Right. The 21st century that leaves you in an upright position in the middle of your sleeping because AWS shits itself or turns your bed up to about 110, so you're sweating like a fat kid eating chocolate cake. Terrific!
And that's what this bed did when the AWS went out. As anybody with half a brain could probably figure out, the proper way to implement these functions on the bed, like even if, let's suppose that you only want to cater to the kind of people who never go far enough away from their phone, and therefore pulling up the app to make the bed go up and down is a perfectly natural thing to do. Do you route your command and control through the cloud? Well, you do if the primary purpose of your smart device is to collect the biometrics and then having some tiny little control systems as feedback is just a secondary requirement.
Okay,
and so that's what I kind of expect here.
The fact I'm imagining some dipshit losing his mind, smacking his phone screen because his internet goes out and he can't get the bed to put his feet down, or maybe the fact that, I have this smart bed that's been sending all my sleep data to the cloud. Why am I getting advertisements for a CPAP and da-da-da?
And by the way, forget remotes. When did we go away from physical levers?
There is that too. Oh, no. Wait. How about maybe a fucking bed that doesn't go up or down?
Yeah.
How about
it's
a mattress and some pillows?
The bed in my bedroom has never been stuck in an inclined position because it doesn't have a motor or anything like that.
Precisely.
Yeah, less
if I want to incline in that bed, I put pillows on it.
I was going to say, like, the smartest thing about our bed is the guy laying next to me.
What?
Is that where you are right now?
Oh, no. No, anyway.
Can you imagine if we were podcasting?
Have we already moved to the after
bed? That's a good one.
Are my stories that boring? Yes.
No, they just get me all hot and bothered.
So, yeah. No sympathy from me for these idiots for either the company who decides that they're going to route all their command and control through the internet, or for the idiots who purchase a bed whose control scheme involves the internet.
I'm just curious, and I guess maybe this is the stupid tech tard in me talking, but why do you need a bed? This goes back to the barbecue argument. If my barbecue is contacting me, we have a fucking problem. You have one job, cook my food. I don't need you to tell me the weather and my horoscope.
But
nor do I need my bed to know how I'm sleeping, in what position, at what temperature. Here's an idea. You know how smart my bed is? If I get hot, I throw the fucking covers off. If I get cold, I put them back on.
Yeah.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah. Although we did actually buy, because we're actually gonna smoke some meat this Christmas, but we actually bought a Bluetooth.
Oh my god, yes, I did. So right, you know how I was making the joke about it's only a probe. It's just a Bluetooth probe so that I know what the temperature inside my smoking chamber is.
I have a meat thermometer too, and it connects to a physical device that's a couple feet away on a metal cable.
I thought about getting one of those, in all fairness. But I am giving this one a chance. If it sucks, great. And again, it's not something that's going to be internet facing. It's not something that's going to call me in the middle of the night and be like, Phoenix.
Do not give it your Wi-Fi password.
Phoenix, it's your barbecue. Exactly. You know, I miss you. We haven't seen each other in a while. And I was just kind of wondering, Phoenix, when are you going to come feed me? I don't need my barbecue doing that.
Now you're triggering me because I still have fucking OneDrive telling me things that I did 15 years ago in OneDrive. It will not stop emailing me.
Oh my God, OneDrive.
That's almost as good. I got to trigger Officer Bemrose like I do when I have people's Google phones when I say, hey, Google, delete all my info.
Yeah, or Google, go fuck yourself, right?
Let's see how many people bitch at me in the chat going, God damn it, you set my phone off.
Yeah. Hey, Siri, eat shit. Hey, Google, go fuck yourself.
There oh, my I think we've God. I love the fact that I want to turn it off. And I know.
Siri, delete the evidence.
Yeah, exactly. remember, that's destroying evidence. That's a criminal offense. Just because they were my porn files, that's irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, okay, I've got a story here. I thought this was funny. So Linux founder Linus Torvalds defends Windows blue screen of death. Now, this is...
Hold on. I thought they've rebranded it to the black screen of death.
It's one of the main things pushing people to Linux.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Linux creator Linus Torvalds has unexpectedly come to Microsoft's defense regarding the jokes about the Windows operating system's infamous blue screen of death. Now it's a black screen of death. The whole thing was first noticed by its FOSS, which is a free and open source software. That's what FOSS means in this case.
Its FOSS is a blog article factory.
Yes, exactly. In a new video with YouTuber Linus Tech Tips, he explained that many crashes are unlikely to be due to software errors. I'm convinced that all the jokes about how unstable Windows is and about blue screens, I guess it's not even a blue screen anymore, are largely not about software bugs. In fact, a large percentage of them are due to the unreliable hardware.
I mean, that's not an inaccurate statement.
Although it's actually most likely, but it's also drivers.
Yeah, yes. I mean, yes, he's not
drivers.
Wrong. He's not
just
wrong,
like it's
but
DNS.
Also...
It's always drivers.
A large number of them are due to hardware failures, and also a large number of them are due to software failures.
Yeah. Now, Torvalds also claimed...
It just turns out that there's a large number of them.
Yes, exactly. Well, they've got a large number of CVEs, too, but that's a different
thing. I was literally going to say, there's a reason that Patch Tuesday is a thing. Thank you, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Reboot Tuesday.
Yeah, the Reboot Tuesday, exactly.
Whatever you call it, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Torvalds also claimed that it's important to have ECC memory in a computer, as it makes it fundamentally more reliable, and the lack of ECC can lead to serious memory problems. And Torvalds also mentioned that gamers who overclock would be accepting an additional degree of unreliability. Yeah, I mean, if you try to run the hardware faster than it can really operate, yeah, I suppose that would be. But
continuing to use Windows after it's blue screened over and over and over again is evidence of serious memory problems.
Yes.
I was actually going to ask, is that actually something that's able to be done? I thought when you BSOD, it's, you know, it's game over, man. You mean you can I mean, I understand the BSOD gives you the code of, like, this is why you're fucked. I didn't realize there was a recovery from. Today I learned.
The recovery is you reboot. That's... Yeah.
No, seriously,
You reboot and you stay out, because that's pretty much all you can do. The system, it's a kernel panic,
so,
right?
So
I understand what a BSOD is. I got all A's this semester. I know what it is and what the reasoning behind it is.
Yeah.
I did not, however, realize that just a reboot will fix this.
Well, it depends on what you mean by fix.
If you're getting a BSOD, a reboot is probably not going to solve all the problems like a magic button.
Well, no, if it's the same driver over and over, it's not going to solve that problem.
What it's not going to do is prevent the same problem again. But a blue screen of death, a BSOD, a kernel panic, whatever it is, basically the kernel has detected that something is that an assertion has failed, that a bit of memory that should never be zero or one is the wrong way. That a particular value in there, which this value should always be in this range, but it's over here, or, you know, whatever the case is, something happened that the kernel does not have code to understand happened. And the kernel is like, well, if this happened, we have absolutely no idea what the internal state is, which means that could damage everything, could blow everything up, could destroy everything. So the only safe thing to do is we're stopping now. You need to put the system into a known state. The known state that is chosen is a reboot, because when you start the whole thing up, and then whatever caused the BSOD to the knowledge of the computer hasn't happened since the last reboot. So your computer is, as far as it knows, reliable. That's what recovering is from, is you put it into a state where, you know, the ultimate absolute clean state for everything is the computer is off. And then you boot the computer and it does a whole bunch of things in a very predictable and known way, presumably to keep the computer in a state where it understands what's going on. And the moment it doesn't understand what the hell happened, it's like, nope, we're done. Let's go back to the known state, which is the computer is off. That's what a reboot is. So does a reboot repair the problem? Well, in so much as it puts the computer back into a state that it is known, but does it prevent the problem from happening again? Well, no, because there's absolutely nothing in the kernel that has any idea why it happened.
Well, no, because, you know, because and this gets into, like, okay, and this is where you start doing, have to do debugs, right? Because I think her Windows machine. This is something I still gotta look into. She's getting blue screens on it, and it claims that when I had to actually go in and enable, like, it's like they don't bother to do a proper dump anymore. They just, like, oh well, it crashed, reboot. It does a very quick memory dump. No, you know, sometimes to debug these things, you've got to have, you know, that you got to enable the larger drop files. But
most users don't need that dump. They don't know what to do with it. They can't do anything with it. It just fills up the hard drive.
Well, exactly. But when you're trying to actually figure out what's going on, you have to actually turn that on.
If you're capable of kernel debugging, then you know what the tools are to turn that thing on. If you're not capable, then you sit there and go, well, there's nothing I can do but reboot and hope it doesn't happen again. And it will happen again.
Yeah. The problem, I need to dig into the, I think there's a bad, memory stick in this computer,
actually I have the knowledge to essentially replace if necessary. And we might talk about, if you don't have a memory tester,
we're gonna have to
make sure that we find the exact, like,
there's an internal memory test in the BIOS, right?
I know, we've been talking about that, because like several times this thing would just crash and wouldn't give a dump file. Then it finally BSOD'd and gave us a dump file, and we look at it and we're like, well, that didn't fucking tell us a whole lot.
No, but I've dug into it, and I kind of determined that, Yeah, there, and in fact, I think we've even, it's like, yeah, sometimes the memory, one of the memory sticks has got something that it throws a weird bit on or something, and so we've got.
I will agree with Linus's point in one way. The 95% of the BSODs are probably like 99. Some incredibly large number of the BSODs happen in one of two places, neither of which Microsoft has any control over. It either happens in a kernel driver or in hardware.
Yeah.
Microsoft doesn't have control over that. In fact, Microsoft tries to have control over that in so much as they have the Made for Windows logo program. That's actually something that I worked on when I was there. And
not to brag,
you know, I can talk about, you know, what goes on there, but basically what it is trying to convince third party vendors who either create hardware for your computer or create code that goes in the kernel to test their shit and not write crap code.
Oh, you mean, Microsoft doesn't?
I believe it or not, the vast majority of blue screens are not caused by code that was written by Microsoft.
No, but their stuff is buggy as shit. We know it.
Well, there's a lot of the other thing, you know, Windows, when I was there, and I'm sure it's, you know, more now, when I was there, there were 6,000 people working on Windows. And depending on what group you were in, there were very different cultures. Some groups, like the ones very close to the kernel often, really took quality and reliability seriously. And other groups like the fucking start menu and shell, were like, you know, if it screws over 3% of users, fuck them. That actually was a bug resolution.
Microsoft doesn't give a fuck about the end user.
Well, I always tried to stick to the groups that cared, but
but eventually,
yeah. But you're not the corporation. And by the way, you're just one of the better ones that worked for it and realized, like, fuck this.
By the way, this is also one of the you can't do anything about hardware, but the blue screens are one of the reasons why. Putting all the drivers in the kernel wasn't the best idea, and why they've been trying to build frameworks to allow the kernel, the drivers to run in user mode. Because, you know, when a program does something that completely breaks the state of the program, whatever that is, if it's running in user mode, then it is in a very controlled sandbox that's run by the kernel, and it throws some kind of exception, access violation. It tries to write to the null, whatever. It does something it can't do. Well, we have no idea what the state of that program is. Something got broken, clearly. We know that, but we don't know how to fix it. There's no code to fix it, because if there was code, they would have caught the exception and fixed it. So it's gone. So if it's in user mode, you terminate the process, and suddenly that executable is not running anymore, but the rest of the system is fine because it was firewalled. The moment that that happens to code in kernel mode, there are no walls between kernel mode and anything else, any programs, anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It could have written to anything anywhere in the computer. So that's why you have to take out the whole computer if something in kernel mode goes haywire.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, even in our, in the day jobs product, it runs on a Linux, a variant of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And there's a lot of stuff that used to be done in the kernel that they've moved out into user space. It's a partially reliability issue. It's being able to.
Antivirus is another one of those things that Microsoft would love to have gotten the fuck out of the kernel as soon as they could.
Well, of course, they're also, you know, I mean, and again, they create the environment for viruses to propagate. Yeah. You know, maybe they should stop that, and then they wouldn't have to run this crappy software.
AV software is rootkits. Yes. Endpoint software is rootkits.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we know this, yes.
The reason this is frustrating me so hard, Sir Bemrose, is because this computer isn't even 6 months old. It barely has anything installed on it. The most that has occurred is I started installing a VM and basically got cock-blocked by, what was that program?
Yeah, I don't remember now, but anyway.
It doesn't matter.
You can forgive me or not, but I have to ask, did you try turning it off and back on again?
Multiple times.
Yeah, yes.
I just can't figure out why this thing would all of a sudden have a memory issue. I understand RAM is volatile, et cetera, et cetera, e pluribus unum, but at the same time, there's
actually
nothing.
Have you tried rebuilding the computer? Because it is always possible it's not
hardware. Honestly, To be honest with you, there is not anything, as far as I know, if I migrated the files that are on there onto a USB and then put them like on my Mac or whatever, okay, yeah. I could probably factory default that system. Because initially what I bought it for was when I was starting my semester and I wanted to build the VM because I have that Linux book on building a VM and also to use it for my digital forensics class and whatever I needed it for, because sometimes you need a Windows machine.
Sometime during Windows 10, Microsoft actually rolled out a feature that they put into the operating system. It was, I don't remember what it was, like Refresh or something. It was something markety. But under the covers, here's what it actually did. It performed an upgrade from your current version of Windows to your current version of Windows. And by upgrade, what I mean is it saved off all your files and settings. It wiped the operating system. It installed a new operating system. And then it put all of those in using the exact same mechanism that is in the upgrade. Now, why would Microsoft go to the effort of doing this? Because they know their shit is buggy, and that solves a lot of problems.
Yeah, we do
it. It also clearly creates a lot of problems.
Yeah, we actually, yeah.
Well, yeah. But, yeah. Well, what the big problem well, it doesn't solve is you're still running Windows.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Because fuck Windows.
Yeah, I used to always say about after a year, yeah, you need to flatten and reinstall Windows because like the registry, whatever, it's just. Yeah,
I mean, that's something behind the mic we might have a conversation about, Phoneboy, is me migrating my files and shit off that machine and just starting from ground zero.
Yeah, we could.
Understand
that. Fuck, we got to do
that. That as a Windows user for probably close to 30 years, and in fact, a literal Windows programmer for 15. The opinionated person over here happens to be running Linux on his primary machine. So,
well, the less
take that how you will,
or I should say the less tech knowledgeable yet equally as opinionated would love to be running Linux instead of fucking Windows on this thing. If I could figure out, and I probably can, because I could probably, if I could ever get the VM to work right, could run the VM on a hypervisor and run fucking Linux and then, or run Windows and have Linux as my main and Windows as my backup. The possibilities are endless. The point is, I have to have a Windows machine. I already have an Apple machine. And if I can basically format one of my machines into being a Linux machine,
yeah,
then
I get
your
it.
Uncle.
VM technology hasn't quite come as far as Tennessee yet.
Well,
all right. Where's my button?
Fuck you!
All right.
There it is.
All right.
It's my turn, though, you.
Yeah, you got. Yeah, I was gonna
people.
Say you have. You need a. Yeah, story.
I do. I've got one. This is my last offering for the evening, but I saved the best for last because Google DeepMind.
I'm already triggered now.
Best you should be. Oh. You should be fully triggered on this one. Google DeepMind agrees to sweeping partnership with government. Incredible potential to drive a new era. Wait for it. The
did
UK.
Did you say a new era?
Yeah, error, exactly.
Yeah, new error, yes.
Yeah, the UK government has entered into a partnership with a Google-owned artificial intelligence company to deliver breakthroughs in clean energy. Here's where the fun comes in. The lab, which they are using, because they will use AI technology, powered, of course, by Google's Gemini models, to try to discover superconductors and other materials that can carry electricity with no resistance. Sounds great, right? The lab's
yeah,
going to act...
science fiction.
Yeah, I know. I agree with this. I was being hella sarcastic. The lab will also act as a hub for scientists and AI and government officials. Because this is why I brought this, was it was the government aspect that really got me. With anyone who has not been paying attention, the government in the UK deciding that we need to have a true and honest show us your papers system where you don't have an option to opt out of the digital ID BS that they track everything you do of every moment of your day. It's not bad enough they have CCTV on you when you're outside. Now they're tracking you just sitting in your living room. But I digress. So this thing is apparently, this lab is going to act as a hub for all of these dickheads and the AI to pursue breakthroughs in nuclear fusion. Now, of course, nuclear fusion technology is where hydrogen atoms.
Yeah, we have nuclear fusion technology, but we very sensibly keep it 90 million miles away.
Exactly. They are wanting to bring this thing front and center because, as you know, fusion technology is where hydrogen atoms are fused at high temperatures, and it's one of the white whales of clean energy. It has the potential to create infinite clean energy because its fuel is hydrogen and its only byproduct is helium.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to get that. They're going to get that done as soon as they figure out quantum.
Exactly. And if you think about the fact that the byproduct is helium, great. You don't think that's a pollutant till you go out in the world that has massive PPMs of helium and everybody's walking around talking like this because they're all fucked up on helium. But I digress. I'm not going to rant about that. It means it. They're claiming it doesn't create pollution like coal, you know, burning coal or gas, and it doesn't result in radioactive waste like nuclear fission. Great. Here's the problem. They haven't cracked how to make the fission scalable and affordable, which is why the UK is turning to DeepMind for help. Yay! AI has incredible potential to drive a new era of scientific discovery and improve everyday life, according to DeepMind CEO Demis Hassabis. And he said this in a release. We're excited to advance science, strengthen security, and deliver tangible improvements for citizens. Yeah. The partnership highlights some of the positives that AI can bring to the environment as it's become a vital tool in accelerating research. For instance, this one got me. It helped Vanderbilt University scientists create a protein language model that allows researchers to respond more quickly to emerging health threats, and wildlife researchers use it to help identify animal species and monitor their populations. Wow. We're going from healthcare and wildlife to nuclear fission. Fabulous. But this is the kicker that really got me, and y'all are been waiting for it. This technology comes at a cost. The computers behind AI require massive amounts of energy to power them and shockingly large amounts of water to keep them from overheating. All of this suggests that the industry's goals of net zero pollution may be unattainable. You fucking think? I'm like, y'all are joking, right? The amount of energy you're going to produce is a fraction of what it's going to cost to run those fucking data centers for the AI. And the water that's already a precious commodity, as we know in Texas with the big thing that they want to build that wants 10 million gallons a day. Don't get me started.
I do really appreciate just how fast the virtue signaling douchebags in Silicon Valley are spinning their heads on energy usage and, you know, green technology and everything. The moment that they finally come up with something that uses a lot of energy that they want to do, they're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, fuck the earth.
Oh, 100%. We knew that with the EV push with all the, rare earth minerals mined by, brown children in sandy places.
Yeah, but that one, they could still pretend that they gave a shit about the earth as long as you just sweep under the rug the rare earth thing. Like,
the fucking cargo ships full of these things that seawater kind of doesn't agree with their batteries and they go poof. And then you've got an entire cargo ship full of vehicles rotting in the sea.
That's the shipper's problem. Silicon Valley has nothing to do with
air pollution. That. Right. I understand. They're turfing it. We get it.
Yeah. You remember what I said a few minutes ago about the marketers being in charge of companies when it comes to AI and not engineers? This is you just gave about a dozen examples of shit that AI can't do, but the marketers don't understand or use the word can't because their job is to tell you can. And it's not important. The truth is not important. The truth is not nearly as important as making promises to people and securing their VC funds. And the engineers are taking a back seat on this one going, all that stuff he said, that was bullshit. That'll never happen. But it doesn't matter because the engineers are not in charge anymore. It's all about marketing. It is all about telling people exactly, what is necessary to separate VC funds from VCs. And once you've got that, then, oh, that's fine. We'll go ahead and spend the money. We'll all get rich on it. And then our company will suddenly discover that the thing we promised is not possible. And we'll quietly go out of business. And that's fine because our C-suite will just start a new business and promise the same goddamn thing, starting the cycle over again. This is why you can't fucking trust promises that come out of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, but okay. I'm gonna trigger you just once again, Sir Bemrose, and say...
Like you haven't been doing... Oh.
It's a personal goal of mine. I want you to know. Too big to fail. Google. You know everybody is going, Google's too big to fail. Meta's too big to fail. You know, da-da-da-da-da.
And not
says
everybody.
Fucking who?
Not everybody, because as far as I'm concerned, the moment somebody says something is too big to fail is the moment that it needs to fail.
I agree with you. So does Phone Boy.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, so do you have another story?
Me? I've got a couple backups, like, you know, ChatGPT is talking about when it won't be till mid 2026 that they'll finally have a porn mode.
Did you say porn mode? P-O-R-N?
Like, yeah, people are abandoning ChatGPT and going over to other LLMs like Grok because ChatGPT has very strict very strict controls on things like nudity and other things that adults like. And the other, like Gemini and Grok and whatever the fuck are the other LLMs, seem to be okay with going into an adult mode as long as you, of course, you scan your driver's license and prove to the company that you're who you say you are and leak all that data, then you can go into a mode where it will create nudies as if you can't find an unlimited number of those on the internet already. But ChatGPT is having trouble competing because their system doesn't have a mode that allows it to create porn. And they've
identified. Hold on. I thought Altman said he was working on that. They were trying to be like, yeah we're not going to da 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 da.
According to the Gizmodo article that I really only skimmed, it is coming next year, which admittedly next year is like 3 weeks away.
Clearly.
But I take that to mean it's coming in mid 2026.
Yeah, or like the end of 2026. I mean, it's
Until like, you know, December 31, 2026.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting it. But what I don't understand is why in the hell that all of these artificial intelligence companies need to be providing content for people to
jacking it, jacking it, jacking it, jack, spanking it, spanking it, smack.
Yeah. Two words, consumer demand.
Yes.
Spend less money and get a browser's account, you cheap pricks.
Browser's account? Fucking make a Reddit account.
Fuck that. Go to XXNX. I don't believe we're having a porn conversation on a tech show, but I am saying,
anybody that listens to the show already knows how to get their damn porn, okay?
But that's what I'm saying. No, that's what I'm saying. All bullshit aside, we all know how to get our spank bank material.
Finding porn on the internet is not difficult. You do not need to use an entire power plant's worth of energy to make AI generate one for you. That's easy to find.
No, I swear to God, it reminds me of the Robin Williams bit where he's saying, you know, Constitution Hall. Did you mean cocksucker? No, I didn't mean cocksucker. I meant Constitution Hall. This is what these things are. Anything that might even sound like something sexual, it's bringing you there.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. I've got,
I'm just saying, I don't need AI to jack off.
No.
I have a human.
Yeah, that too. But
yeah, and not everybody does. In fact, not all of Gen Z.
But here's the okay, now you done triggered me thinking about this AI shit because there's literally VR that you can like step your feet through the little like straps, cinch this thing up to your waist as a dude. Your member goes in this little machine and you got VR goggles on, and you're imagining that you're railing the fuck out of, like, I don't know, Jessie Jane, may she rest in peace, or your favorite fucking porn model, all the while this machine is manipulating your goody bits, so in your brain, yeah, I'm really giving it to this porn star right here. What happened to physical contact? You're a fat, pimple-faced nerd fucking a computer. Get out in the world. Breathe fresh air. Find a girl. Maybe you'll find a nerd as nerdy as you. You never know. Girls are easy. If you have a big dick and you say the right words, they're putty.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just saying we've trained an entire generation of people who grew up with a phone in their hand and who never left their homes and never, you know, if you ask JCD, never went to a sock hop. And don't know how to talk to the opposite sex. And it is actually going to be like 30 years from now, it's going to be a demographic disaster.
Again, but this is where we talk about idiocracy, where the dumb ones are just fucking and creating. And the smart ones are like, I'm going to wait. We're going to wait till we have our career. So Bob died from a stress-induced heart attack. Any of you idiocracy motherfuckers out there, you know the scene I'm talking about. That's what we're heading toward. We're literally heading towards sitting on a toilet while you watch television and eat fucking butter out of a tub with a channel called the Masturbation Channel, jacking it for 45 years.
Go away, Baton.
I mean, yeah.
Thank you. That's what I am having a fit about. And Cotton Gin's right. He says, why would we talk to women? They accuse you of rape if you even look at them wrong. Dude. Yeah,
that was my point about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, yes. I mean, truly, you did make that point. And I find that, as a woman, I find that offensive as fuck. Because, ladies,
well,
get over
your
fucking
selves.
As a man,
I find you offensive as fuck.
Well, I hope people find me offensive as fuck. It means they're paying attention.
It's obscene. That's the point.
My point is, ladies, knock it off. You're not that special with your buck teeth and your crossed eyes and your fat Haagen-Dazs Starbucks ass. Guess what? You 400-pound heifer. Nobody wants to fuck you. They're not undressing you with their eyes. They're putting clothes on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I dropped a link in the chat, by the way.
Yes, I remember this. Oh my god, yes. That's a fucking blast from the past.
I couldn't.
Okay, the only thing you need to do is read the first sentence on that one where it says it is a peripheral for Windows 95 or 98 to know how far it goes back for people talking about some kind of scheme that allows you to have sex with your computer. And this was an April Fool's joke, but
we don't need
but there were people trying to build it.
No, but you can tell. But I mean, yeah, I remember. I think
I love the genital drive Model M and genital drive Model F.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah. Back in the day, there was one of the very, very first chat programs to try to incorporate video, like, you know, 10 years before Skype, was something called See You, See Me. And
I've actually used See You, See Me. We did it back on RadioNet in 1996.
Yeah.
Streaming it was on Real Audio 1.0.
It was not high quality or not high fidelity, but it was, you know, in the day, it was basically the first time that you could send a video of yourself to someone else. If you had a camera, I was never one of those lucky people who went out and spent $500 on a camera for my computer. And now that cameras are cheap for the computer, I'm one of those people who doesn't want to give up my pictures. I still don't have one.
I will tell you after reading this gaffe that you put in the chat, the fuck you, fuck me thing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it actually reminded me of, like, all completely jokes aside. It reminded me of the Wii vibe, where, again, you have an app on your phone that you can control your partner's sexual device that is inserted into her. So she literally can be wearing this thing to dinner. They even have vibrating panties where you can be wearing this thing to dinner and you've got the remote in your pocket and you're just like, I think I'm going to make her squirm.
Yep.
And no, nobody needs control over my dildo but me. I sell that, you motherfuckers.
I did a story on, I think it was either early ATN or actually I think it was Grumpy Old Ben's, which had to do with an Internet of Things cock cage.
Was that the one where the guy got stuck in it?
Yeah, it was again one of those things where there was an internet outage and... No, this wasn't an internet outage. That would be a concern right there. No, this was a vulnerability where... it, you know, somebody found a way to break the API that we are supposed to, you know, the idea is you put an app on your partner's smartphone and she gets to decide whether or not you get to use your dick. And there was a vulnerability where somebody figured out how they could use their phone to control somebody else's and lock them out. And if they changed the password, then you were in this thing and it wasn't coming off.
Have you ever used a cockcage, Sir Bamrose?
And God, fuck no.
Okay.
First of all, it wouldn't fit.
This fucking guy. I may not hit the bottom of the tuna can, but I'll scrape the sides. No, I've seen these things. I worked in a porn store. Okay. I have no penis. I got a hell of a set of balls, but I got no
my
penis.
My understanding is that it's a submissive thing, but since I'm not submissive, I don't, I
and
can't.
And because
relate.
I spent time in the BDSM community, I can speak to the effect. There's a lot of, they have these cages that actually have the probes that go in the woo. Yeah. Anyway, I don't understand anyone.
I literally can't even, I'm the wrong person to ask.
This is what I'm saying is I don't understand anyone. I understand fetish.
Well,
but I don't want to cage
like,
the cock with a digital thing. I'm fine with putting one with a key and a lock where I have the control on whether or not your dick is able to get hard. I don't need a digital app on my phone that says you get to have an erection. Okay, just kidding. You don't. No! Nothing
a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't see the difference there. And if they're into that sort of thing, that sounds like a really cool idea. Right up until... As we pointed out even on this show, right up until either the API gets hacked and somebody else locks you out, literally.
Or locks you in.
Or locks you in. Or the AWS goes down and you find yourself sitting here with a cock cage you can't unlock in your smart bed, locked up, you know, at 115 degree temperature.
Fucking dead. I am not... I'm having that visual thing right now of phone boy in a cock cage and the fucking internet goes out and he's just looking at me going, what do I do? For all you sex manufacturers out there, you need a backup key that I can release my husband's dick and balls so he doesn't die.
This was the only computer security bulletin that I've ever read that... had a diagram which included a man's genitals and a description of exactly where to drill in order to manually unlock this thing because you had to drill through the plastic case.
Oh, bullshit. You're not putting a drill anywhere near any guy's goody bits as far as I know. That's going to be a hard pass, pretty sure.
I don't know. Some people might be into that sort of thing, too.
I hope you have water because that's going to get hot and not in a good way.
It was never hot. I told you I don't swing that way.
No, I don't mean hot. I mean, literally like physical is going to cause friction. Which
I don't think this
heat.
Show can get any lower.
Just give us time. I think we can. Phone boy, what else do you got?
Oh, okay. Disney says Google AI infringes copyright on a massive scale. Talking about.
Didn't we already talk about this pot calling the kettle black thing?
Water is wet. Next story. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I love this because it seems like this is one of the ways the AI bubble is going to burst, right? Because none of these companies can actually prove that what they did or didn't do, right? So, Disney has sent a cease and desist to Google, alleging the company's AI tools are infringing Disney's copyrights on a massive scale. And according to the letter, Google is violating entertainment conglomerates' intellectual property multiple ways. The legal notice says Google has copied a large corpus of Disney's works to train its Gen AI models, which is believable, as Google's image and video models will happily produce popular Disney characters. They couldn't do that without feeding the models lots of Disney data.
I was literally about to say, what, you mean it's training the AI on how to be a pedo?
Exactly. The C&D also takes issue with Google for distributing copies of its protected works to consumers. So all these memes you've been making with Disney characters, Disney isn't like that either. The letter calls out a huge number of Disney-owned properties that can be prompted into existence in Google AI, including The Lion King, Deadpool, and Star Wars.
I have a question, because I'm going to keep hitting this button. What about the YouTube creator who takes these Disney coloring books and makes horror characters out of Disney and Belle from Beauty and the Beast and things.
Did you just say horror characters? Because I think ChatGPT is going to have that feature next year.
Probably. That's yes. Great. Now, the company calls on Google to immediately stop using Disney content and its AI tools and create measures to ensure that future AI outputs don't produce any characters that Disney owns. Now, Disney is famously litigious and has basically written the copyright laws in this country. There's a reason I refer to them as Mickey Mouse copyright laws.
I'm going to go even further and say my advice to everybody is to immediately stop consuming Disney content because fuck that company.
I second that.
They are so woke and their quality has gone to shit.
Well, okay, so hold on, because this just actually jogged a memory of something I recently saw, and it's completely applicable to what you're talking about. There was a photo generated with some guy that was trying to, like, visit every Disney theme park in, like, I don't know, 17 hours or something, which is completely impossible to think about. Just flight time alone.
I actually did once visit every single Disney theme park in existence, but at the time there was only one of them.
I mean, there you go. But the reason I brought it up is because there were a lot of people who saw this photograph of him supposedly with Mickey Mouse. Here's the problem. The one thing you never see, and you all can look at authentic Disney material, not that you would want to, the one thing you don't ever see is Mickey Mouse with teeth. He doesn't have them. He has a tongue, but he does not have teeth. And in this image, on this roller coaster, this Mickey Mouse image had teeth. And people were flipping their shit, saying, this must be an AI-generated image because of this one oversight or flaw.
How do you know that Disney doesn't, that Mickey Mouse doesn't just keep his lips over, like he's good technique?
No, I get it. Like, he's good at giving a knob job, he covers the teeth. I get it. I don't know. But I'm wondering, like, why is Disney humping up and down and flipping shit over Google? This is a money grab. This has nothing to do with them giving a shit about the images of their characters being portrayed in a
certain way.
Next
you're going
to
tell me there's gambling going on around here. I get it.
I know. It's completely shocking.
Yeah. I mean, but basically, yeah. I mean, while Disney wants its characters out of Google AI generally, the letter specifically cited the AI tools in YouTube. Google has started adding its VO AI video models to YouTube, allowing creators to more easily create and publish videos.
And that's exactly where the fucking video is I was talking about is on YouTube of this influencer supposedly trying to visit all these parks, and him and Mickey are on this roller coaster, or I don't know, maybe it's Space Mountain. I don't give a fuck. I've never been to Disney. I'll never go to Disney. A, it's too fucking expensive. And even more so, I don't deal with pedophiles. That being said, that's exactly where I found this, was on YouTube. So I find it funny that they named that.
You're unmuted, man. Yeah, and that's really all the story is. But this is it's like, okay, yeah, Disney's probably, you know, I don't know. This is probably a money grab because, yeah, I'm sure that there's lots.
They don't say.
Yeah, well, there's gambling going on. No, but what else we do? Okay, so that was my last story. Is there any? Do you have any others you want to, you know? Yes, and Disney's ripped off other. Yeah, you know, Disney's always ripped other people's shit off. So what
Disney himself was a dark ass motherfucker. Fucker. Everybody thinks, oh, Walt Disney was so wonderful.
Actually sounded like a pretty cool guy to have a beer with.
Yeah, before he completely was working with the government, and this is a lot of MK Ultra shit through his characters and such. Look into that.
Hello, his parks hadn't taken off yet. Where was he going to get his money?
Well, I mean, there is that.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, well... All right. Is there any other? Okay. So, like I said, is there any? You're out of stories.
Brought three. Yeah. Arguably.
I think we're about done. Did I talk 2 weeks ago? Do you remember me talking about something called ClickFix, which was a CAPTCHA based phishing attack?
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah, you talked. Yeah, I think you. Yeah, talked about it.
I think so.
I don't know why I even brought it, but Bleeping Computer pointed out that there is a new variant of it called ConsentFix. The difference here is. That a hacked site now, which shows a CAPTCHA, will, you know how CAPTCHAs these days are asking for email and shit like that. I always put in user@example.com if it lets me. But they do that to filter out who they're going to send to the right site and who they're going to send to the hacked one, whatever. This one is now, if a site is hacked, it will open a URL to a valid Microsoft login page. And here's the trick. If that browser is already logged in to your Microsoft account, then Microsoft doesn't ask for any credentials. They just ask you to click confirm and has a prompt that says, the page that sent you here wants, you know, access to such and such, you know, identity information from your Microsoft account. And they, you know, that is a legitimate thing because Microsoft uses the Microsoft accounts for authentication. So if you go to a site that has been hacked, these things will switch out the we need to authenticate you to the give us API access to your account page, which Microsoft helpfully puts up the same UI for both. You click confirm and the attacker now has API access and full control of your Microsoft account.
How about no?
How about no? What the f- It's funny you mention that because I have had countless conversations behind the microphone when doing things with Phone Boy where I look at him and go, should I authorize this? Because I'm...
No.
No. Some stuff has to be, okay? But I'm...
No.
I'm a big proponent of no. Even something like...
Here,
okay,
here, let me give you API access to my Puppet account that I just created for this in a VM. Because fuck you, that's why.
Yeah, like, here's access to these nuts. It was like, okay.
No, that username's already taken.
I actually had something today because, of course, I've been having to deal with the funeral home and a bunch of fucking money grabbing bullshit. And even something as simple as, oh, DocuSign would like permission to access your, you know, precise location. Fuck you.
No.
You don't need it.
You don't fucking need that.
For me to sign a fucking document saying I authorize you to put my mom in a fucking box and crisp her up. You don't need to know my exact location. Google, go to hell.
I mean, you provided your exact location on the form because it has address.
But that's what I'm saying is on a technical platform, you know, oh, Google would like to access your precise location. Well, want in one hand and shit in the other, dude.
Yeah, no shit, but...
Unless you have a very strong reason to need any information of PPI, you can hold your hand on your ass.
All right. So do we have anything else? Are we done?
I hope not.
All right, well, we're done.
All right, I think we're done with this. Yeah, let's get it over.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?